One, two, three, four. Just another day at my dead-end profession. I'm living day to day. Yeah, listening to some good old country records on the radio. Hell, yeah, what else can I say?
Yo, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for making us part of your week. I'm Ryan. With me, as always, is Dave Callens.
Hey, what's up?
And on the soundboard, Robert Timothy.
It's good to be back, guys.
So no elevator in this fucking studio.
There is an elevator. Dave and I take it all the time. It's a freight elevator.
It's awesome.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Sometimes we fight in it because it's really epic. Like, the walls are stationary.
Yeah, it's like a Mortal Kombat
moving.
Level, dude.
Yeah, it's great.
Oh, man. I was worried we couldn't have Alan on the show anymore. I'm like, that sucks.
There's a good, like, 2 to 4 inch gap that you could fall down into if you really wanted to.
Yeah, oh, so I don't freight like elevators that. Are fun, dude.
Oh, it's really great. Yeah. And it's like clunky. Like, it's more of a ride because it gives you the feel that at any moment you could start plummeting down.
Yeah.
So, Bobby, I want to start off by saying this. I went down the rabbit hole again. I did. I discovered
a bunch of ketamine, huh?
I did not understand.
That's the K-hole, Bobby. Come on.
I discovered this thing. Now, what happened was I was clunking around on the Netflix there, and I stumbled onto this movie called Colonia.
Oh, my God. Never. Is this going to end with you being an anti-vaxxer?
No, it's going to start with him being anti-vaxxer.
Yeah. So Colonia is about essentially this cult in South America.
Okay.
And
is this current? Is this right now?
Well, hold on. Okay. It takes place in the early 70s.
Okay.
And I found out it's a true story. And then this is where I went down the rabbit hole.
Mm-hmm.
Bobby, are you aware of how many Nazi colonies there are in South America?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about how many there are currently, but
50. I looked it up. There's around 50.
That was a big thing is, so if you imagine the breakup of World War II, what's going on in the world in 1945, the last real dictatorships were, you know, you had Mussolini in Italy, then you had the fascist stuff going on in Germany, obviously, but then basically it was South America. Like, South America was the stronghold of dictators at that point, and so one dictator called up, he's like, hey, bro, you know how we sometimes have pool parties together? Is it all right if I come and move a bunch of my Nazi guys there?
Well, that's what is infuriating is because what I found out while, like, looking at all this, because I was fascinated. I spent a week, like, looking at all this, like, I didn't know these existed.
I like how you asked Bobby if he knows. Because he's a tall, blonde-haired, blue-eyed guy. Like, of course he's going to know.
I need to know where I can go when this shit gets busted up here.
He gets mailings from them all the time. Like, you sure you don't want to sign up?
I'm actually literally their poster child. I'm the face of this colony.
I've been sending letters to take those down, but, you know, they're not very litigious. So anyways, what happened was, and this is what infuriated me, I just assumed my whole life, like, everybody in the Nazi party got theirs after World War II ended, and, like, we hung them for their war crimes, but just like every other situation in the world, middle management was left to take the fall for all that shit, and the higher ups, like, absconded to South America where they never got their comeuppance. Like these guys, most of them, these guys that were like Hitler's right hand man, like, died happy on a beach with a
surrounded by grandkids and
hot Brazilian wife. By the way, it's funny how once World War II ended and they realized how hot Brazilians were, suddenly they were a little hasty on that whole master race thing.
Right.
They're like, well, you know, that whole purebred thing, you know, look at that ass.
There's some interesting ones. There's a whole colony of ex-Confederates that left the south of the United States after losing the Civil War, and they started
and took over the White House.
They started a colony down in South America, and they're still going, and they still, like, have the Confederate flag, and they practice, like, good old hometown Southern rituals and stuff. But like you just said, obviously,
well, like, grits are whipping.
Yeah, right. Well, they did the same thing. They interbred with the local people as well, and so now it's this weird thing because you watch a bunch of, like, brown and dark-skinned people carrying this Confederate flag around Argentina.
What are you doing? You know what that means? But that's the thing. And they all still exist down there. This particular one, it's called Colonia Dignidad. Definitely look that up. That was probably the most scary one. This dude was their leader, was part of Hitler Youth, and he escaped some sex crimes against children in Germany and came down here and started this colony where, like, the women were put in colonial garb and men and women were kept separate. And and you couldn't leave. And they're surrounded by barbed wire and trip lines and shit.
Jesus.
So
isn't that crazy what you can do down there? Like, that's what Jim Jones figured out. He's like, if I just go to South America, I can keep everybody penned in and nobody can do shit about it. Like, there's still a wild west. Have either of you guys been to South America before?
No, I'm not going now.
When you go there, it's a weird feeling because A, it fucks with you because everything is different. Like, literally the sun is different. You know, you're used to looking kind of southward to see the sun. Everything is northward. The stars are all completely different. But there's just a different...
Are you saying the Earth is flat? Is that where this is headed?
Right. There's just a different vibe. There's, like, this vibe of, like, anything goes. Not like Mexico anything goes. We're like, oh, I could go buy a hooker and a donkey and see what happens, right? It's more like I can start a fucking colony and enslave a bunch of people and nobody's going to say anything about it.
Yeah.
That's what I want to do when I go to Tijuana. Yeah. I don't know whether there's a hooker and tequila business, but I'm looking to enslave some brown folks.
That's right. You got to go down to South America. There's some crazy shit going on down there. And every once in a while, we were down there. I was down there for my field school, and you would be in the highlands in the middle of Peru in a place that doesn't get visitors and stuff, and you'd come by a situation where, like, somebody had a compound, a high-wall compound, and there's a bunch of people in there that look kind of like they don't want to be there, and you have a few questions, but you're not about to ask because you don't want to become one of those people.
Right, right. So, anyway, yeah, that's how I went down the rabbit hole. And by the way, those people down there, like, they're not openly Nazis, you know?
Right.
That's where they came from, but they are super proud of it.
They're all right.
I was listening to, like, yeah, exactly, they're all right.
They all have Spencer's haircut, you know, shape size.
The high and tight with the flip on top, sure.
Little frog mascot on the flags.
Little vest with a pocket watch. I'll tell you something about those alt right, though. Sharp dressers. Yeah, I'm not going to take that away from them. Also, social media made me feel like a monster again this week.
What'd you do?
Happens a lot, but it's not so much.
Let me guess. You announced trans people weren't human beings, and that you hated people of different races. That sounds about something you would say,
don't
right?
Mix me up with your grandma. Right. anyways, no, it's nothing I did. I didn't get any backlash for anything I said or anything like that. It's just watching other people sometimes when I realize how much better human beings are than me. I'll tell you what it was. Is this is something I've seen. I didn't know existed before social media, is people that spend endless dollars trying to keep their pet alive.
Oh, yeah.
Now, and the thing is, I always, well, the first time I saw it, I'm like, God, look at this idiot. But then I realized, like, everyone does it but me.
No, I'm on your page, buddy. I've had this conversation with my wife before, because when our dogs started getting old, we had to have the conversation of, like, okay, we don't want to wait to be in a vet's office and get a $8,000 bill and have to have a hard conversation, right? That's emotionally charged.
Yeah.
I recommend everybody do this, by the way. Sit down with your partner if you have one and say, here is how much we will spend.
Oh, right.
And do it in sober times when there's no emotion involved and say, look, we got to balance between our kids and our family and our life and everything else. Right. And when somebody's like, there's no number, fuck you, there's a number. If it's $1 million and you can't afford it, then there's your number. So somewhere there is a number. You might as well sit down in the sober light of day and figure that number out so you're not doing it when you're sobbing in the middle of a bedtime.
I think you lost us both at sober, though, honestly.
But you guys know I love my dogs. I have two dogs. My dog, Rufus, the beagle, has a $500 spending limit if he gets sick. Yeah. And guess what? That goes down $100 every year he gets older.
Right. He depreciates in value.
I'm sorry.
It's a taxable asset.
We're going vehicle rules here, man. If it's a 10-year-old car, you scrap that thing.
Unless you put a big-ass spoiler on that dog, then you up the value.
Yeah, man. Like, at one point, I'm going to be in the vet's office. I was like, this thing's turning into a real money pit. I'm sorry, babe. Let's see what we get for scrap here.
Is that where you go to the Vietnamese restaurant?
That's racist. So anyways, no, that's the thing. And the thing is, these aren't stupid people. These are people I respect, my friends, and not like rich people that have like all the money in the world either. Right. But also like my friends, they put their dog in an iron lung or something. Yeah. I'm like, look, if your kid gets sick, of course there's no number. Then
there's a number for the kid.
Put a second mortgage on your house, you sell your car. But like when it comes to the pet, like, am I the only one not doing this besides me and Bobby?
No, I think you have it right. Now, Dave doesn't actually have a dog.
I've had dogs most of my life.
But
they all had a number.
Their number was like $4 or $5. I think that's true. And then also I think you should think how you want your dog to go out. Because I had this conversation too. Now we had a situation where one of our dogs was really having a tough time and he was on his way out. And we made the hard call to like take him and get him put to sleep. But we had certain milestones. So that's the other thing. You should think about the milestones. Like, if he's not enjoying life anymore, if he's just sitting around in pain all the time.
If he doesn't learn sit and roll over,
right.
You know, scrap
he
and
shits
start
on
over.
The carpet one more damn time. No, but if he can't enjoy life, then you want to put him down.
No, see, that's the big thing to me is the quality of life of the dog. Some of these people are putting so much money into a dog that's just in fucking misery. It's like, You're doing a terrible thing, and you're wasting all your money.
Because they got to airlift their pooch to Sweden so they can see Europe's best canine AIDS guy.
Every time I see one of those things, I think to myself, I should open a vet clinic based on a trope that was around in 1970s TV sitcoms, which is you bring in your super sick dog, and I'm like, oh my God, this dog is so sick. It's going to cost $8,000 to fix it. And they're like, all right. And they give me the $8,000, and I just go to the pound and get a similar looking dog.
This goes back to like why I feel like a shitty person, because some of these people I know, they're my friends, I know they don't make as much money as I do, and yet they're spending like $8,000 on their pet. I'm like, how did you even, like, yeah, we had to make some real sacrifices, max out a couple credit cards. I'm like, I can't decide, stupid or just better than me. I can't tell. I'm like, it takes a saint of a person to love their animal so much. So that's when I start going like, am I a monster? Am I a piece of shit that I don't love my pet as much as my friends do?
Yeah, and also we had to put one of our dogs down, and then the other one just out of weird serendipity ended up dying.
Like, yeah, broken heart.
Like 24 hours later, yeah.
Your line of thought there is not what makes you a monster. What makes you a monster is your general demeanor. I just want to be clear about that.
But the other thing I thought is like, how do I, because my dog ended up dying sporadically, and this was one that I was very, very close to. I had like lived in the desert in a van with for a long time, went to work with me every day. Like, she was with me 24 hours a day. I'd rescued her from the streets. She was as close to me as a dog could be. And I was telling my wife, like, when she finally has to go,
I really hated hunting it for sport. I was really conflicted about it. When that arrow hit, I knew I'd made the wrong call.
Shouldn't have chewed up the couch. So, so when I was talking to my wife about it, I was like, someday I'm gonna have to put her down. And I don't think I want to do the vet thing. Like, that's not her personality. She was a feral dog before. She doesn't like being in some kind of weird vet's office. Like, she's not gonna like this. I was telling her, I'm like, and I meant this literally. I was like, I think one day we'll just go out to one of our favorite places, like out in the desert.
You're not going
to
shoot the dog.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, my God.
No, he's going to of mice and men the dog. He's just going to, like, cuddle it and then slowly snap its neck.
Yeah, exactly. I think in that sense, for that particular dog, it would be way more humane because it's instantaneous. You shoot it right in the brainstem. It dies before it hears a sound. And
I just heard the sound of thousands of radios crying off.
Well, for that particular dog.
I just had the realization that Bobby is a little more of a sociopath than I realized.
No, that's the whole point. If I was a sociopath, I'd just take it to the vet and say, fuck it, who cares what the dog thinks? In my mind, though, this dog hates the vet. She hates being inside. She loves being outside. She was a feral dog.
She loves being shot in the head.
She loves
that's
being
one of her favorite things.
She's a big gun nut.
Yeah. She's huge on the Second Amendment. She loved being in the desert with me. You know, I'd take her to a place. We would sometimes, like, literally curl up and spoon. And we would just do that, and I'd put one in the brainstem, and she would go out in the happiest
Jesus
moment
Christ.
Ever, as opposed to being...
I can't get behind this at all.
Can you... But
I'm really sorry I brought the whole thing up.
Think about going to a place where you hate it, you're nervous, you're anxious, you don't want to be there.
I'm nervous and anxious right now.
And then dying there, as opposed to dying happy in a beautiful, blissful moment.
Betrayed
and you never see
by
it coming.
The person you love the most.
Not betrayed! Saved, if anything! Jesus.
Bobby's going to take the dog down to South America, where it's legal to knife fight an animal... And he's going to challenge it to one last duel.
First, I got my dog a sweet Confederate flag tattoo.
All right, can we change the subject?
Wait
please?
A second. Hold on. Before we get out of this, how come nobody's tattooing dogs? Why isn't that a thing yet?
I can't even talk to you about pets anymore. We're just too different. And the fact we went into this, and Bobby's like, "Hey, I agree with you on not doing all these life saving procedures on your pet." I'm like, "Oh, great." He's like, "Yeah, I like murdering dogs." I'm like, "Oh, that's not the guy I want agreeing with me." Damn it! So I went from feeling about myself to worse.
One day the future will look back at this conversation and see how right I am and how horribly wrong you two are.
Say that about every conversation we have.
It's easier for you to take it to the vet. It's harder to take it out to the desert, but it's better for the dog.
Okay.
Bobby's probably got the same plan for his grandma and his parents when the time comes.
Yes.
I'm gonna take him to the amusement park. I'm gonna wait till he gets onto the highest hill of that first roller coaster.
Boom!
Blowgun into the neck with a little poison tip dart. They won't feel a thing.
Oh, I thought about him just throwing his grandma at the top of fucking Zeus or whatever the fucking
she's always loved the view from up here.
Like,
grandma wonders why I'm carrying around the tank from No Country for Old Men.
Bobby's gonna join Make-A-Wish. He's gonna take him to like Disneyland and like execute him on their favorite ride.
It was your parents' wish, kid.
They go to the water park.
They were tired of paying the medical bill.
He holds them under in the wave pool. They die happy, all right? They die happy.
Oh, that's the funniest conversation about murdering children you will hear all week.
Oh, man.
Oh, Jesus.
This is fun. Oh, by the way, you ever tune in to someone else's podcast or internet radio show or whatever
it is? Right,
not,
there, no.
Not you.
Dave doesn't even turn into our own.
That's why I'm talking to Bobby over here. I knew your answer, but...
Dave talked to me the other day. He's like, you know, we have an intro song? That's crazy. How did we get that?
Yeah, who is that? They're good.
I'll be like, Bobby, do you know that conversations we have in this room are recorded and released on the internet? Oh, my God. I had no idea.
So anyways, this will sometimes happen. Is sometimes I'll find out that a artist that's kind of obscure that I really like, somehow some random podcast or an internet show like scored an interview with that person, yeah. You know? Then I'll have to tune in and hear what some random dude considers podcasting. And the thing is, most podcasters are fucking bad.
Yeah.
Right.
Right? They don't know what they're doing. We've opened up a medium where anyone can have a radio show. Here's the problem. Everyone thinks they can do a talk show until those mics go hot, and then there's a lot of,
So what should our podcast be?
It reminds me a lot of, do you remember the Chevy Chase show in the early 90s?
Yes,
it lasted for like six episodes. But it was back when Chevy Chase was the hottest star in the world. Right. And they're like, dude, this guy's the next Carson. And Carson had just retired. So everyone was scrambling to come up with like something to fill that void. And so they gave Chevy Chase a talk show. And it was just like when a comedian starts a podcast and has no fucking idea what he's supposed to be doing.
Right.
And it's just like a deer in headlights. Only you could see it. So like they'd come back from commercial. He'd be like, shit. There's a band. We got a band here. That's pretty good. Give me.
How much of that do you think in the Chevy Chase example? I think there's a lot of people who take shows that they probably don't know how to do. Like Chris Rock took a show, a few other people. And thankfully, they had really good comedians like Louis C.K. was on it and stuff as a and writers around them who like help support them. Chevy Chase is notoriously one of the biggest assholes in all of Hollywood, and everybody hates him. He's horrible to his staff, his writers, everything. I wonder if everybody purposely let him and watched him fall in flames and was like, yes, finally, the big guy who thinks he's so full of shit, let's screw him over. I wonder if there's a bunch of people who could have thrown him a lifeline and just chose not to.
Oh, yeah. Imagine, because writers' rooms look a lot like the studio we're in. Can you imagine the three of us sitting around, and all of a sudden, the star of the show comes in his little fucking maroon suit and goes, hey, faggots, are you done with that yet? And all of a sudden, we just start like striking through all our best jokes.
Yeah.
Or I'm like, yeah, almost.
And there was even worse stories, too. It wasn't just like, hey, I'm a bad guy. There was a lot of like, he would walk in and he didn't like the look of the new guy, so he demanded that he get fired. You know, like ruining people's lives and careers just on a whim.
And he was misogynistic too. Like they'd be sitting around a writer's room and a woman would chime in like, what about this joke? He'd be like, hey, how about you give me a hand job? That's what you're good for.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyways, I tune into this podcast.
So wait, are you saying you scored Chevy Chase to be a guest next week? That'd be amazing.
No, I would never put him on a mic again. No, this band I like called CKY, they're kind of an obscure band. They had a little bit of fame in the 90s because they like were featured on the show Jackass. The former lead singer doesn't give a lot of interviews, right? And all of a sudden I see that he's on some dude's podcast with like an hour long interview. And this is like the first time he's like given an interview since he left his old band. And I'm like, oh shit, man, this is great. He never gives interviews.
Yeah, it sounds amazing.
So I tune in. And first of all, it went through a lot of some dude like, we have Devin Miller on. And so right there, it's painful, right?
Yeah, pause 1 second. Yeah. Let's say you were so nervous you didn't know what you're doing. And guess what? When we first started this podcast, we didn't know as much what we're doing as we do now. Like, we had a lot of bad things, too.
Yeah.
You know what we did? We fucking edited them out.
You fix it in post.
Yeah. You edit them
out. So many podcasts don't edit. Why?
You like, have this guy. You have this draw. This is your trophy. This is your billboard you are putting up for your show so people like Ryan, who have never heard of you before, will listen to your show. And if it's good enough, they'll keep listening. And all you have to do is edit out the ums and ahs that you stupidly put in the first place.
Now, this is what happened, and this happens a lot. So if you're a fellow podcaster and you somehow fall ass backwards into a great guest, don't let this happen to you. This dude, who I guess was a musician at some point, spent the whole goddamn interview talking about himself. Like, he was, oh my God. So I'm going to literally tell you how this went down. Now, this guy, although he's obscure, you guys don't know who he is, he toured with Metallica. He toured with Guns N' Roses. Like, you know, I'm like, to someone who's a fan of it, he's got great stories.
Right, yeah.
They're in there somewhere. And so this is literally how the entire thing went. And I was like smacking my phone against the counter, like begging for it to stop and be like, so you were in CKY. That's, you probably got a a lot of stories there. And he's like, well, yeah, you know, like the first time we were asked to tour at Metallica, yeah, I know what you mean, man. I was in a band. I got a band. We're called Lucid. Man, we just we don't play a lot of shows anymore. We do like 3 a year, but I'm telling you, man, like when we do play, oh boy, everyone kind of comes out and just gives us like a ton of local support, and like we we didn't tour too much outside the Northeast. That's where I live. And, you know, but when we do, man, let me tell you about my ethos on music. I'm like, God damn it.
Right.
You know, cut to like 27 minutes later. It's like, yeah. And that's why Lucid should have been the best band in the world. Anyway, I think we're out of time here.
Oh, my God. He forgot what position he was in. Like, yes. It'd be great if the lead singer for the real band was like, oh, really? So tell me, when did you get your start in music?
Yeah, right. No, the guy, I could tell, has never been interviewed for a shitty band that obviously never made it, and like to his own admission, like never left the Northeast. But like he's one of those guys that probably always dreamed about being interviewed. And so all of a sudden, when there's a mic in front of him, he just gives the interview he would have given if anyone ever gave a shit about his band.
He also he thinks he's that dude's peer. He's like, oh, you toured, I tour.
Oh yeah,
I did 3 shows this year.
Yeah, dude, no, that's exactly what he was doing. Because every time he'd be like, yeah, people don't understand the guys like us, you know, the fans and the groupies, and oh man, it's just crazy, right there. Guy who was actually in a famous band.
What's funny is he has a podcast. If he wants to be interviewed, he has a venue for this to happen whenever he wants.
You know,
he just
funny?
Brings an interviewer in.
Every episode of his podcast was like that. Like he always just in the same stories. Like he tells the same stories every episode.
But did I tell you about the time we finally got to play Massachusetts? Yes!
No, that'd be great. So you bring in a different famous person every week to just talk about yourself and briefly introduce them.
And you know what? Here's what I'm gonna do. If you're someone that follows me on Facebook, I will put the interview link in the fucking comments to this podcast, and I'll throw a picture of his band because they are the hokiest motherfuckers I've ever laid eyes on.
He's gonna lose his fucking mind when he gets a bunch of hits for this interview thing. Yeah. He's like, oh my God.
Well, he got a famous person, so I'm sure this is probably the most hits he's ever got.
Dude, I like this though. I want to get, we have some friends who are friends with MMA people, you know, big stars, whatever. We should get like the biggest star we can, like, I don't know, Wanderlei Silva, somebody like
that.
Well,
if attainable. It's San Diego, it'd probably be Dominic
Cruz.
Yeah. Cruz, but someone like a lot more well known. We should bring them in as a guest, and then just have Shores talk about his history as a fighter.
Yeah, you know, I know what you mean. Being the one of the best UFC fighters of all time. You know, a lot of people in this, it's called the California Fight Club, is now defunct because it didn't have any type of sanction. It was technically a felony. Well, you know, I beat this gangbanger who had no martial arts experience, and man, that was tough. You know, I did what's called a double leg. Do you know what a double leg is? Yeah, I didn't know how to punch at the time, though, so I kind of just kind of noogied him to death. We're out of time for Dominic Cruz. You know what's funny, though, is my dream when I was an amateur fighter was obviously to go pro, which I never did. But I never thought I could be in the actual UFC. But the local promotion that was the big-time promotion when I was fighting here in San Diego was called Total Combat, right?
Yeah.
And my dream was to be the 155 Total Combat champion. And I looked it up recently, and you know who was the champion at the time? Fucking Dominic Cruz.
Oh, really?
Oh, that's amazing.
I'm like, so well, that even that would have never happened because arguably one of the greatest bantamweight UFC fighters of all time was holding that strap and the featherweight strap and I think the welterweight strap.
Oh my God. Yeah, he's just he's a heavyweight at that point.
I just want all the belts, thank you.
Dude, now you guys are both on combat sports. That's one thing that I still have trouble wrapping my head around is cutting weight. Like, looking at you, Shores, I can't even imagine you getting anywhere close to 155.
Well, back then I walked around at 178, so there's that. But
that's still a lot of fucking
pounds.
Weight to cut, Jesus.
Yeah, yeah. I was lucky in that the guy who was my training partner who was one weight below us, I was in college boxing, and so the weight class are a little different. I was fighting 175. I could have made 165 pretty easily. I actually got sick at a meet one time and got down to 165 and had to come on with a bunch of clothes for my weigh-in because you can't weigh in under 165 for a 175 fight.
Right.
You have to be between 165 and 175.
Why did you fight at a lower weight?
I couldn't because my training partner and my best friend on the team and the guy I trained with, he was at 165 and he was way better than I was.
Okay.
And so it was dumb. It was like I could cut weight to be second string.
His training partner was actually Dominic Cruz.
Yeah. I could cut weight to be second string or stay where I am. I had to cut like 2 pounds for weigh-ins. Like I was like walking around at 177.
Mm. Nice.
Here's some comic news everyone's talking about in the comedy community is this guy, I guess, I forget his name. I know his first name's Patel, or maybe that's his last name. He used to write for Saturday Night Live. And
I saw the story.
He's made some headlines because he made the mistake of accepting a college gig, which people are doing less and less of these days because of things like this. He was hired by a organization at, I think, Cornell University? I'm not sure. Columbia. They're called the Asian American Alliance.
Okay.
And they were doing a diversity show, a show celebrating diversity.
And he's an Indian comic.
He's an Indian comic, and which technically is Asian, so that's part of their whole...
Yeah, sure.
He was up there, and he made the assumption that I would have made if I was hired for a show that is supposed to be about diversity. Now, this isn't a very good joke. It's actually a little bit of a hacky joke, but it's certainly not an offensive joke. He said he was talking about a black guy that lives in his neighborhood in New York, and he said, you know that being gay isn't a choice because no black man ever looks in the mirror and goes, this whole black thing is too easy. I'm going to add something else.
I actually think that's a good joke. Yeah.
It's all right. So, but the whole point of that is like, you know, being black is tough in America. Yep. Being gay is tough in America. Being black and gay is tougher. His mic was immediately cut. There's discrepancies. Some people are like, oh no, that was just the turning point. We didn't cut it right away. But either way, his mic was cut. That's indisputable. People came on the stage during his act with a working mic of his own and just started deriding this comic. Like, we are so sorry about this.
What's your point at this point? Are you arguing that it is not hard to be black or not hard to be gay? That is literally the only point you could be making at this point.
These entitled fucking college students.
It was ridiculous.
The term snowflake gets thrown around a lot these days, but colleges, dude, holy fuck.
Yeah.
I can't even.
This is one of those things, and you should be upset as a person on the left about this, because this gives the right so much ammo.
Yes.
You see, you're attacking your own.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is it's a black eye as far as like, you know, when people have ammo to say, oh, PC culture run amok. It's like, you know what? I usually don't agree with it. But in this instance, yeah.
I would love to do this as like a bit where we get together somebody. Now, obviously, we couldn't do it because we're white. So we need to go grab a buddy.
Wait, are you saying we have to put on blackface?
We're going to need to find a gay or transgender black man to come with us to go to that venue and then start confronting the students and saying, why are you bigoted pieces of shit booing somebody off the stage for saying that I have a hard time in life? And then watch their faces just go completely pale.
They're the Asian American Alliance. They're already pale.
Just have him lecture it and yell and get really mad and like, you bigoted pieces of shit, and just watch them panic as they get in deer in headlights mode.
This is why comedians don't play these colleges, though.
Right, yeah.
Because here's the thing that is really glaring to me about this whole thing is that life is going to fuck these kids once they are out of school, man. This is clearly people that went from being sheltered by their parents to having their parents' money still be a bubble around them. Right. But when they get out in the real world, man, what are they going to do?
Yeah. Well, it's...
I kind of can't wait for that.
I mean, it's crazy because it did happen real quick. There's actually a book out where a guy traced when this started happening. He literally got it down to a year when the campuses kind of flipped to this degree. Now, like, usually, especially at 2013...
Okay, so that recent.
Yeah.
I would have thought it been a little before that.
That's what a lot of people think. And that's why he's like, this isn't a millennial thing. This is actually post-millennial. Because if you track it, you can actually go... He went down to the original incident and like where it spread out from. And he traced it back to a certain style of parenting that became really popular in the mid-90s that was much more geared towards protecting the kids from any outside thing that happens.
Is this helicopter parents?
Kind of a version of that. It was good intentioned of we want to support our kids and we want to give them the best options and everything like that, but it missed out on a lot of things like, hey, you're going to have to deal with stuff in life that you don't like all the time.
Yeah.
And because of
that... No ability to handle adversity.
Exactly. And so because of that, you have this weird split. But it's funny because I went to arguably like one of the most liberal institutions on earth. I went to Berkeley 10 years ago and we would have comedians come through that did super racy stuff. I loved it. It was my intro to stand-up comedy. I never saw stand-up comedy until I saw it in college.
Right.
And you would have these guys, I think Jeselnik came through, like a bunch of people came through and did super racy stuff. I was at the most liberal institution in the world and they were allowed to come and do it and people laughed and had fun and it was whatever and we understood it was what it was. And then at some point, literally a few years after that, it flipped to the point where if you come in and say gay people and black people have a harder time in life, just by saying the words gay and black, somebody's going to yell at you.
Right. Well, that's what this is. And this is what infuriates me so much. This is buzzword outrage culture right here.
It's outrage culture is driving me fucking crazy.
It's not just PC run amok. That's not what it is. It's buzzword outrage, which, you know, this is the same thing that got me in trouble when I shared that that poster from NAMBLA to make fun of it. But all people saw was the poster and the word pedophile went, Ryan's advocating for pedophilia.
Right.
You guys are so fucking dumb.
He was just trying to start a colony in South America. But this same thing just happened to Kevin Hart. You guys saw that or not?
Yeah.
He was picked to host, what was it?
The Oscars?
Oscars.
Yeah, he was all lined up, ready to go. And then somebody dug up an 8-year-old tweet. I didn't even read the tweet, but it was something.
Dug up an 8-year-old in his backyard. Now everyone's all upset about it.
But it's insane, dude. It's fucking insane.
Yeah,
but,
and do you really believe Kevin Hart is the front face of the alt-right? Like, is Kevin Hart really coming in to try and trash minorities? Is Kevin Hart the problem?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing is, I'm not a Kevin Hart fan, never have been, but I'm not a fan of the fact he made some homophobic slurs in his past, but I do like the fact that he refused to be forced. Forced into a disingenuous apology. And by the way, all apologies that you are forced into are disingenuous.
Yeah.
That's the weird thing is that, like, you said this, but we're going to hold something away from you until you say the words, I'm sorry.
Right.
Who does that make feel better?
Huh?
And it's so contrived because the fucking entertainment industry doesn't give a flying fuck about the LGBT community.
Right.
They just
don't. They're worried about backlash that might affect their event, might affect their fucking bottom line. So they're like, ooh, well, he said this. Dude, if they thought he said anything that might affect their bottom line, they asked him to apologize for it. If they thought there would be backlash if he said, you know what, white supremacy is wrong and the majority of the country was white supremacists, they'd be like, ooh, we're going to need you to apologize.
Yeah. I mean, technically, white supremacists are a minority. So you are you are attacking a minority.
But here's the thing, too. I didn't read what the tweet was. I didn't read in about it a whole much. I was just watching the headlines. But to your point, like, I like Kevin Hart. Sometimes he's fucking horrible. Sometimes I think he's really funny.
Yeah.
But as far as what he said, I don't know what it was. But it could have been something as innocuous as, like, 10 minutes ago on this podcast, you're making fun of Chevy Chase, where he comes in, he's like, oh, you fags done yet? It could have been something like that, where so out of context that people don't even realize that it's not fucking offensive at all.
And he's already apologized for it. That's the thing.
Back then, yes. He
made a genuine apology, but he refuses to be beat over the head with it by people that are just bullying him into an apology.
Yeah. Not just that, but Kevin Hart is a guy who's grinded for 2 decades, and in doing so, unlike a lot of people who grind for a long time and get their success, he brought a bunch of people up with him and continues to do that by taking new comics and bringing them on the road and doing a bunch of stuff with them. Like, he is a good human who uses his advantages for good things, and it's shitty to pick somebody out. Like we said, pick Chevy Chase.
Yeah.
Pick him.
We can find some stuff. Too bad he doesn't know how to use Twitter.
Pick the guy who's an asshole to the up-and-comers, not the person who uses their position to help elevate other humans. Like, that's just such shitty way to do things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ryan, we got to be a little bit secretive about this, but Dave actually helped me out with a caper this week.
So much fun.
It was a lot of fun.
Did you sprinkle them on your lox and bagels?
I had an event. Again, we'll reveal the rest of this to the audience a little bit later for some reasons. We got to keep it.
Statute of limitations.
Yeah, we got to keep it a little secret, but here's what I love, and this is why I love. Dave, I love you. Thank you so much for this. I sent a text to Dave on Monday night, and I'm like, hey, Dave, you available tomorrow? And he's like, I could probably move some stuff around.
The texts were so vague, it was annoying to me.
He's like, what do you need me for? And I said, a caper. And he was automatically on board, which I love. Like, it's always awesome when you have a friend who you can just be like, I got something I need to do. I can't tell you much about it. Are you in? And they're like, yes.
Can I talk to you for a second?
Yeah.
So this guy, you guys are just doing this caper?
I know. I'm going to get to why you wouldn't have been a good choice for this particular caper.
You better have a very good reason. I don't like little rascal shenanigans. You guys are just doing this without me? Like, I thought we were a team.
Kind of.
Did you ever see the movie The Town, Ben Affleck?
I don't know. Did you and Bobby sit together in the theaters and not invite me?
Holding hands in the front row, yeah.
Yeah, you guys fucking split up a large popcorn or something?
There's that scene in there where Ben Affleck's character needs to beat someone up, so he goes to get his thug friend. He's like, hey, I need you to come with me and do something.
Yeah.
I can't tell you what it is. You can't ask me any questions, and we can never talk about this again. The guy's like, all right, let's go.
Yeah. It was a lot like that.
I could have been that friend.
No, I got Damien and Dave. And
Boy. Oh, so just
the podcast united.
Yeah.
So everyone that you do a podcast with except me.
No, there's a lot of scientists who didn't show up. They would have been horrible. They can't pull a caper for their life.
Evidently, I can't either. Go ahead.
It was during the workday, so you would not have been able to make it. That was the reason we couldn't do it, Ryan. But we had to.
I feel 0% better. Go ahead with your little story.
We had to pull a caper, and so
hey, should I leave? You just tell this to Dave.
Yeah, actually, it's kind of private.
Obviously, make you feel some degree of uncomfortable.
It's kind of private, so I won't say exactly where we went or what we did, but let's just say we had about an hour drive out. We had to go pull a caper, and then we drove back for an hour. And here's what I love, a couple of things.
This is what I'll give you about the caper that we are allowed to say. I had to pretend to be a profession that I had no background and no knowledge of at all.
So you were George Costanza?
Yes.
Not archaeology. Had nothing to do with archaeology. But it was a great thing, too, because Dave did this role so fucking well. If there was an Academy Award for capers, Dave...
Kevin Hart would not present it to me because he is a homophobe.
But Dave would have got it. Dave had it perfectly. He got the dress down. He got the questions
he was
down.
Wearing a dress?
Hey, what I do on my own free time, you know?
He got like the assertiveness of how you say certain things, and just everything was so fucking perfect that Dave and I have decided we're now going to be con men because he did such a goddamn like between my planning and his execution.
Hey, Bobby.
Yeah.
I have a bachelor's degree in performance from.
What do you have in capers?
Associates.
It's a certificate at best.
It was more of a vocational school.
Dude, it was so much fun, though.
More like a license.
He gave Dane and I both scripts.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know how to read one of those.
The whole drive up there, we were just joking about how we were going to fuck it up intentionally just to blow the lid off this thing. Just to screw Bobby over.
That was the other good part, is that the entire drive up was just them fucking with me about how they were going to do it wrong. And Damien kind of did, because Damien decided that his character, who was from Texas, would have an accent.
But the accent went in and out. Like sometimes he had an accent.
Oh, and it wasn't a Texas accent.
No.
Oh, dude, when someone is trying to do an accent and trying to keep it consistent, they have their hands on the lion's jaw with that sometimes.
It was so bad. It was so bad. And it was like, every once in a while, I would just pipe in from the back seat, and I would like winced because it was so bad. And so I ended up having to, like, I was like, I need to explain this because there's no way he's going to buy that this is just the world's worst in-and-out Texas accent. And so later, when I was speaking to the person we were pulling the caper on.
I'm seeing Damien dressed up like Foghorn Leghorn. Yeah. I'll bid you, sir.
I was sending him an email, and I was talking to him, and I was like, well, you know that the other guy that was there with us, the one with the speech impediment? It was the only way I could explain away his bad accent.
Yeah, the guy that was wearing a Cowboys jersey and had a holster with six shooters in them and wearing the hat? Yeah.
The giant belt buckle.
He is mentally retarded. Yeah. I'm really sorry.
Yeah, so I didn't have to do that for Dave because Dave hit it out of the park. But I think that was probably just an insanely successful caper, Dave.
Dude, it was so much fun.
We really have to do this more often.
Yeah,
like, we gotta
absolutely.
Or we got to turn the degenerates into some kind of prank show because there is so much wasted talent in this room right now, caper wise.
Yes, wasted indeed, because I was not invited.
We'll let you guys know what that caper was in a few months when it's no longer important as to it succeeding.
Yes, but it's no longer important. A lot like me.
Yeah. All right, Dave, I think next time we have to include Ryan in the caper.
No. You know what?
Include him. He starts doing a horrible accent. I am Le Ryan.
I'm Jesse the Body Ventura. Let me tell you something about my film.
That would have been a better accent. Damien can do a good Jesse Ventura.
Dude. We'll set up a fake caper to make him think he's like, we'll do a caper about a caper.
You inception the caper.
Jersey jerk.
Ryan's gonna take us out to a field and shoot us in the back of the head at our happiest moment.
He's like, I wanna go that way.
I get it now.
I wanna go that way.
Oh man.
I'm gonna call the guy you're conning, I'm gonna tell him what's up.
Capering.
Dude, I almost fucked it up too, though, because when he gave us the script and he told us these certain things we had to do, certain things we had to say, we were going somewhere, and I thought we had to wait until we got there.
Oh, yeah.
I hear Damien start reading his script, like, you know, naturally, like he's like working into it. I'm like, oh, am I supposed to start doing that now? Oh shit, okay, let me catch up.
Yeah, it was a good team effort. That was a good one. We got to do more
sounds
capers.
Sounds fun. So anyway, let's call it a week. Hey, before we go, this airs on Tuesday, so this coming Thursday, December 13th, I'm going to be at the Burning Beard Brewery where I run my monthly show now. It sells out every single time.
Great show. Definitely get tickets.
Burning Beard is awesome.
Oh, yeah. I love it there. And you can only get tickets now at the brewery. It became so popular, they had to take them offline because locals to this brewery were getting bummed out that people would go online and beat them to the tickets. So,
wow.
it's only sold at the brewery, and it is sold out on pre-sale every single time. This lineup will feature Brian Simpson, Allison Gill, Alec Perrin, and myself hosting. So,
great lineup.
Killer lineup.
December 13th at Burning Beer Brewery. Check that out. All right. I'm Ryan for Dave and Bobby saying see you next week. Cruising with the twos. Yeah. I don't know the hooker and tequila business, but I'm looking to enslave some brown folks.
That's...
Yeah, time passing by. Oh, yeah, time passing by. Oh, motherfucking time is passing by.